All right, welcome to the podcast, everyone. We are here today in eastern Nebraska with our friend Bryce Lambley. He is a longtime bow hunter, coming up on his 38th year. So Bryce has a tremendous amount of experience over that time, and every season he's very insightful, documents his hunts. You're an author. He's written for Bow Hunter Magazine, Traditional Bow Hunter. So Bryce is a wealth of information. We're excited for this podcast today. We're going to get into early season bow hunting tactics for whitetails. He's got a sheet of paper here with all the dates of the of Pope and Young bucks that he shot over the years, and a lot of them are in September and October.
I think that's been as much a result of the fact that I just hunt all season as anything else. And I figure the deer have got to be somewhere, and I've got time, and I've always, with very few exceptions, refused to coach in the fall. And I did do a 3-year stint in cross country toward the end of my career. But I've normally said I'm not going to coach in the fall because I want to be out there from the very beginning of the season. That's what I've always done. And I was actually one of the guys in the NBA that pushed for the September 1st opener. There were a lot of guys.
Nebraska Bow Hunters Association.
That's right. And a lot of the guys weren't sure it was even something to ask for. And there were others that said they didn't want to hunt early. And I was like, fine, I'll be out there from the beginning, whether it's October 1st in Iowa or September 15th or now the 1st in Nebraska. Mm-hmm. I just see it as an opportunity. And I think every hunt is an opportunity to learn something because, let's face it, if I'm hunting 80 to 100 times a year and killing one buck, maybe two if it's a super year, there's a lot of unsuccessful hunts. But not if you are going out there with the intent on learning something and also enjoying wildlife and the outdoors.
If you guys are in the need for some new hunting clothing this fall, you need to check out legendarywhitetails.com and their new Hunt Guard line. They've got everything from base layers to outerwear in an affordable package, or you can buy each garment individually. It's going to take you from the beginning of the season all the way to the very end. And last year, we wore their late season outerwear quite a bit. It was excellent in super cold temperatures. We were out there in sub-zero temps hunting, you know, outside of a blind with no heater with this Hunt Guard stuff on, and it kept us in the woods, kept us warm, and ultimately helped us be successful. So check it out. It's the Hunt Guard line at legendarywhitetails.com, and we can save you guys 10% on it if you use our promo code. It's THP18 at legendarywhitetails.com.
Let's talk about those opportunities then. You hunt almost every day of the season, if you can, and starting in September, actually starting during the summer, how do you approach a new season? What's your thought process?
I think the older I get, I'm getting a little bit more mellow. I don't know if it's a part of slowing down, but I have properties that I've hunted for a long time, and a couple properties that are still fairly new. But even my old-time properties have changed a lot. And so it's always a learning process. And I've found even that the amount of rain you get during a year, or during a summer, even affects the way the woods look. Even your familiar woods, and this year we've had pretty heavy rains at different times, and so the woods look different than they did last year. Also, one of my properties was logged out 2 years ago, and that didn't, you know, bring a smile to my face. But on the other hand, the deer are still there, and there it's an entirely different way to hunt, and I think that's been good for me. Because I do think sometimes I get stuck in a rut and go back to the same stands, which have been very successful for me, but I do like the learning process. I use trail cameras. I always, during the year, am mentally making notes of, I wish I had a stand there. And then during spring turkey season and then during the summer, I'll do that. And matter of fact, I drug a ladder stand 600 yards in on one of those properties here just the other day in the heat. But I know that that's going to be a dynamite spot in late October. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always thinking about it, like you guys are, and it's always on my mind. And once the season starts, I'll try to get out probably. Well, I'm a retired teacher now. This is my second year in retirement. And so I'll try to get out 10, 11, 12 times a week. That includes morning and evening as separate hunts.
So what do you focus on then going into season? If you have a particular buck that you're hunting, are you looking for a food source close to where you believe he's bedding, or how do you approach the properties that you're hunting?
One buck that I'd like to finally close the deal on, and he's massive, 4x4, 4x5-ish. I think there are two chances for me to get him, and one is the very beginning of the season, when he comes to feed. And it's imperative, I think, when you hunt September, to not let them know that they're being hunted. Well, of course, that goes with any time of year, but September especially, because as soon as they know that they're being hunted, things change a little bit. This year, I've got beans on that property for the first time ever. And I have not been doing much glassing. I know that probably two or three nights of a week, he'll come out into that bean field. And I just got to guess where. Mm-hmm. And I've also got to figure out how to get in and out without him knowing he's being hunted, and also without spooking other deer. So I think that's one of your big issues in September, is being able to get in and out, which is why many of my stands are very close to farm lanes. People, you know, think you're hunting on the edge. It's not using, you know, you're not really getting all technical with them. Well, you know what? That's the best place to get them. It's also the best place to get out quickly. I've been known to get out of a stand early when a train goes by early to give that additional noise so I can slip out quickly. There's only 10 minutes left, but I don't think he's going to come. I'm going to get out of there rather than bang out of there after dark. I also will use farmers' lanes sometimes as access, because I know that deer are used to activity on those lanes, and then just slip in 100 yards perpendicular into the edge cover, mm-hmm. between the woods and the beans or the corn, sit center pivots and do some of that stuff. I oftentimes take a chair out and just sit in the inside rows of corn. And my goal in September is to hopefully catch something right as they're going to feed, usually at dark.
Can you discuss your properties? Because I think they're something a lot of people can relate to.
One property is basically 40 acres of Platte River bottom, part of a much bigger chunk of river, but I can only hunt 40 acres of it, and it's actually probably smaller than 40. And then there's probably 120 acres of corn outside of that, and also a dike separating the woods from the corn, a levee. Another property was the same as I just described, except the farmer just sold all the trees to a logger, and he came in and took almost every tree. And it's now a weedy bedding area, mm-hmm. with still the corn. And then another property is basically a CRP marsh looking stuff. And very small trees, hard to even find a tree that you can get up in, but there's deer in there. And it's also near a giant cornfield. And I think a lot of deer are spending tons of time in the corn. Hopefully you can find some pivot tracks or something like that maybe give you a little bit of definition on where the deer are going, give you a clue as to where to hunt. But a lot of it's basically corn butted up to river bottom timber. I think we do ourselves a really good deed if we go out there every day trying to learn something. You know, look at each hunt as an opportunity to learn. Look at each property as an opportunity to learn something new that might help you out later on down the line.
Deer season is finally here for a lot of us, and if any of you are in the need for some new bow accessories, you need to go to TrophyRidge.com and check out their stuff. They've got a full line of sights, rests, stabilizers, and quivers. We love their full containment arrow rests. They're perfect for our style of bow hunting, whether we're hunting in the ground or from a tree stand. They're going to keep your arrow on the rest, keep it from dinging on the riser when that big buck is coming in for a shot. So go to TrophyRidge.com, check out their stuff. We can save you guys $10 on each purchase there with our promo code. It's THP10 at TrophyRidge.com. And recently on this Nebraska trip, if you watched any of our new YouTube videos, you notice that we are rocking our Vortex optics the entire time we're out there. We've got the spotters out, the binos. We love Vortex. They make great products for everyone. Whether you're on a budget or you're looking for high-end glass, Vortex has it. And they've got a lifetime warranty on this stuff, which is hard to beat. So check out Vortex Optics. Just go to vortexoptics.com.
Are there a couple bucks that stand out to you as far as stories you could tell from a successful early season hunt, and what went into that? What was your thought process?
There's a story behind everything you see in here, including the smaller bucks. But I think the most rewarding hunts are the ones where you went in with a specific plan in mind and you saw that strategy come to fruition. And doing so in September, using the element of surprise, and also there's a little bit of pride in doing it on days when other guys are not going to be in the woods. A lot of those early season hunts can be a a dry run of sorts, but I don't treat them as dry run. You go in there and be ready to capitalize on what opportunities you get. And so, yeah, there's a few September stories for you. Well, the big buck that I killed 2015 on Patriots Day is a really good example of a hunting location that wouldn't raise anybody's eyebrows. It's a hunt that you'd say, wow, you're not really thinking outside any box. You're alongside a trail from the woods to the corn, and you're only 10 yards or 15 yards off the center pivot of the farmer's lane that goes around the circular field. You're not going in very far. Well, that was my idea. My idea is, I don't know if he's going to come by here. This is one of his many options to get into the corn or come out of the corn, for that matter, because they're spending a lot of time in the corn during the daytime. But it's also a place where I can get in and out very quietly, without laying down much for new scent at all. I'm walking on a lane that gets a little bit of farm traffic already. And as it turned out, I came in and I actually had cross-country practice coaching before, and I only had maybe 90 minutes to hunt. And I said, I'm still gonna go do it. And went out there, climbed in this tree, and right about dark, I hadn't seen much at all, and I was ready to get down, and the buck came out of the corn and was going back to the woods, mm-hmm. and doing the reverse of what most of us think. And he literally stood over he was on my trail. I also had just a little bit of an early season scent on my shoes, and I just put a little bit on there, a tiny little bit, just to give him something else to think about. And he literally followed me in and got to about 15 yards, still quartering to me, and I'm pretty high in this stand, which is, I usually hunt 10 or 12 feet is all.
Right.
And this one's about 15 or 16. And he was quartering me, it wasn't a shot, and he was satisfied, and he turned to go back to the corn, and as he turned, I shot him. And that buck ended up in the 170s, non-typical. But it's the kind of situation where it was hot that night, it was probably 80-some degrees, and a lot of guys wouldn't be hunting. And it's September, a lot of guys wouldn't have said it was worth it to go out there for 90 minutes after a full day of teaching and coaching, and can't kill them sitting at home. And that stand, actually, a tree about 10 yards away from there is a place where I also killed a nice 140-some 4x4 in early September as well, when the corn was there. And that deer was going from the woods to the corn, but I have killed two really big deer in September that came out of the corn going back to the woods. And I think it was a situation where that perhaps the corn actually was less buggy than the woods.
Sure.
And so they were preferring to bed out in the corn because they were had less mosquitoes to deal with, and then maybe going for a walk about toward evening. So there's three deer killed within a short distance of each other, all large. The other one was a 150-some drop time. All killed either coming out of the corn, going back to the woods, or the one going from the woods mm-hmm. to the corn right at dusk.
So I know you have another interesting story, a buck that you killed in the corn. That was an October buck.
That was literally ended up turning out to be 2 days before they harvested the field. And it was right around early October, maybe October 4th. But that was a center pivot buck that I sat on the pivot. There was a... The road to the center pivot through the corn ran by a little bit of a marsh. So it was a marshy swale out to the center pivot that lasted about a quarter mile. And a lot of deer are in there, but a lot of deer in the woods, a lot of deer in the corn. But I was having problems in the woods. I wasn't seeing much, and even though it was October. And so I came out and sat on the pivot. And sure enough, I saw a buck come out of the corn into this grassy, marshy area to browse around. And I had probably 25, 30 minutes to make something happen. Mm-hmm. And I got down off the pivot, walked a few rows into the corn, snuck down the corn rows, and it was dry. And so it was really difficult. And I ended up killing that deer on the ground. I don't know, you guys want the full story?
Yeah.
Well, he was on the second pivot track away from the center pivot, and I was on the pivot. So I got down, I got into the corn, and then walked down corn rows. And I was probably 20 corn rows in, walking down the row until I hit that second pivot. But by now, it was so quiet, the wind had stopped like it often does right at dusk. And I knew that if he was paying attention, he could hear me. And so I tried to sound like a deer. And so every few steps, I would, like, I literally would yank on an ear of corn and kind of grind on it a little bit and then walk a little bit further. And all this whole time, I'm running out of light. And so I've got to make this happen, but I also can't just go barging up there. He's out in this marsh area, probably 10 or 15 yards away, I think, from the corn. I get to the second pivot track and I start walking down the pivot track. Well, there's twisted corn in the track, and it, pivot hasn't been on for a while. And so I'm making more noise. I'm thinking, this is never going to work. My gosh. Anyway, I get about, I don't know, maybe 10 rows from the lane that, you know, where the cornfield ends partially. And I all of a sudden I see corn row move ahead of me on the pivot track. And I think it's the buck, but I can't tell. It's kind of dark in there and there's just enough debris. All I can see is this thing move, and it was a deer. And I didn't know what else to do. I mean, it's early, but I grunted once or twice. And, you know, and again, it's counterintuitive, but I started making some noise. Mm-hmm. And I took a couple more steps, and whatever deer that was bounded out of the corn and went back out into that marshy area with the lane that goes through it. And I thought, well, you know, I could tell it was a deer and it looked like the buck. And I thought, well, that was pretty cool. I got within 10 yards of him, but I was just a little bit too late to get him out in the open. But I didn't give up. I just kept going very slowly and making noise. And when I got to the edge of the corn, I peeked out in there. There he is, standing about 15 yards away, looking back at whatever he had heard in the corn. And I was able to move a couple corn stalks with the tip of my longbow, and I was able to sneak an arrow through him and killed him. And it was a, I don't know, 130, 135 yeah. inch buck, and killed on the ground, stalking in a weedy cornfield.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, and again, that thinking outside the box, yeah, probably. But I learned, you know, by sitting on that pivot, I learned a few things, and I, you know, it's not something that's going to work every time, that's for sure. And I've never killed one since like that, but I have had a number of deer walk by totally oblivious to me sitting on a center pivot.
Yeah.
They might look up in the trees, but they are not looking up at pivots.
Yeah.
And I realize pivots aren't in a lot of your listeners' range, but where there are center pivots, don't overlook them.
So for those who aren't familiar with center pivots, you know, what are they? How, you know, what are the structure? How high can you get up on a pivot?
You know, I don't think you're probably any higher than about 10 foot on a pivot. There have been times when I've had to take, you know, like big 2x10 planks and lay them across the supports above the wheels. Places I've hunted in Iowa, they get enough rain that I don't think they use center pivot, or they don't use irrigation most of the places I'm out over there. But if they're, you know, in Nebraska, when I graduated from high school, pivots were just getting started in 1980. Just very few people had pivots. I talked to a farmer buddy of mine that I ran cross country with, and he said probably 1 or 2% of the farmers use that. Everybody was using gates, gravity irrigation with pipes. And that has totally changed now. I mean, there's pivots everywhere. And I think actually the further west you go, there's ground that, in my opinion, probably shouldn't be farmed, but it is being farmed, and it's being farmed with pivots. And that might offer somebody an opportunity. Now, again, somebody that gets enough rainfall that they don't have much irrigation, they won't have anything to do with it. But basically a pivot is just a big pipe that walks around the field on a big set of wheels. A big aluminum apparatus that goes around the field and like a big circle. And I think in areas where it's dry, and I would bet that that'd be some of South Dakota, some of Kansas, and a lot of Nebraska, they can be a really good opportunity. And a lot of times what farmers will do too is if they know they're done irrigating for the season, which might coincide with the beginning of hunting season, they'll park their pivot in one particular spot. And with farmer permission, of course, that might be a really good place to climb up one of those legs of the pivot. Yep. You're above the cornfield. You have good visibility. And like I said, deer don't look up at pivots.
Yeah.
You can't be doing gymnastics up there, but you can get by with a lot.
Sure.
And I've had a number of 110, 120 inch bucks walk by me at 5-10 yards from the pivot, not pay me. I mean, you feel like you could jump on them. You probably could. But once they're out there, they're not expecting danger from it's a pick cornfield or a pick bean field. But if there's a pivot out there, you could probably work a decoy underneath that, and you could be up on that pivot and, be in business. And you might, in other words, there might be a place where you can have a tree stand out in the middle of a cornfield, and that tree stand is the center pivot.
Sure.
Again, you have to talk to the farmer ahead of time and so forth. But a lot of farmers like the fact that they have hunters on their property to keep an eye on center pivots, because center pivots have a lot of copper wiring.
Oh, sure.
And you got your bad elements out there that steal copper wiring to fuel their other habits. And what happens then is I've talked to farmers before, and they want their pivots watched. Mm-hmm. And so you might say, look, I can even get up on a leg of a pivot and kill some deer for you if you want me to. And they might go for it, and they might tell you no. But it would be, and even the pivot wheels themselves might give you an opportunity out in the middle of nowhere.
If you watched any of our videos, you notice that we're on our phones the entire time we're out in the woods. And no, we're not looking at Facebook. We're on our Onyx maps trying to figure out what our next move is. Onyx is an incredibly useful tool, not only for mapping and scouting bucks, but for finding places to hunt. I mean, you can find out who owns property on there. You can find out where your public lands are located. This app is for everyone, whether you hunt public or private. It's been a game changer for us. And we can save you guys 20% off the Onyx Hunt app on onyxmaps.com. Just use our promo code. It's THP. Now, that's in all caps, THP, at onyxmaps.com. We'll save you 20% on their Onyx Hunt app. One small item that we never forget to pack with us whenever we go to the woods hunting is a good, realistic grunt call. This year, we're using the Deer Grunters from Woodhaven Custom Calls. They sound super realistic, which is very important to us for deer that get called to constantly on public land. We got to try to sound as real as possible, and Woodhaven is all about realism. That's what gets results. So you should check them out. It's woodhavencustomcalls.com. We can save you guys 10% on everything they sell site-wide. Just use our promo code there. It's THP2018 at woodhavencustomcalls.com.
So we've talked about some September hunts. Let's get into October now. Anything jumps out at you as far as a good October hunt?
Yeah, there's a big wide 140-inch 4x5 up there that killed on a day that the wind was probably blowing 25 or 30 miles an hour. I remember the day because that was when Nebraska football started to go south. And everybody was still going to watch the Missouri and Nebraska game. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to go hunting. I'll hit the VCR and I'll watch it when I get home. And Missouri beat us that night, but it didn't bother me a bit because I ended up killing a really nice buck. But it was a day when, again, most people would not hunt because it was blowing close to 30 miles an hour, blowing hard. And this was on a property that has the CRP and marshy ground that there's hardly a tree you can even climb up in. And this particular, there was a trail that went to a bean field from basically an old sand pit that had a bunch of whips, cottonwood whips for cover. Mm-hmm. And I knew they bedded in there, but it was, very, very hard to hunt. And there's no tree that you get up in. But I did find one young cottonwood that was about the size of your calf muscle that was up there. And I had a little lock-on wind walker, about the smallest stand you could find. And I wrapped that baby up in there, and I felt like an idiot. Because literally, when you're on that stand, if you leaned in one direction, the whole tree would lean. That's how bad it was. And how tall was it? I can't tell you for sure. What I do know is, standing on the ground where the deer ended up standing when I shot him, I could touch my stand with my longbow and I could touch the platform. But anyway, I got up there and I saw a buck coming toward me, and I'd already killed a really nice 140-inch early in September, and so I was going to take something pretty nice to kill another one and finish my season. And I saw this buck, and originally I wasn't that impressed. I mean, I liked him, and I would have shot him first in a heartbeat on my first tag, but second tag I wasn't sure. So I got my video camera up instead, and it was literally 10 minutes before quitting time. And he comes out and he walks right under me and stands on the spot where I was standing, where I crossed the trail to put that stand up that day. I put that stand in that day. And he stood there where I had been standing, and as I'm following him with my video camera, and he's at now 3 yards from the base of my tree, and at the most. And all of a sudden I realized he's pretty good. And I took the camera away from my face and I looked, and he's like, oh, he's a lot better than I thought he was. And so now I had a problem because I was less than 3 yards away from a really nice buck. And I had a video camera in my hand, my longbow was sitting in the tree. I was able to make the switch, and he was focused out, his eyes were focused out toward the bean field looking for whatever laid that scent down, because who's going to be stupid enough to climb this tree that, I mean, it's a tree, put it this way, the tree is small enough he would rub it.
Yeah.
That's how small the tree was. And I was able to make the switch and lean over and put one down through him. And that buck ended up in the 140s and just a crazy hunt. And when I went back the next day to finish up and take pictures and pull that stand out, I could touch the bottom of my stand with my longbow from where he was
standing. That's incredible to be that close to a mature buck like that.
It was. And I think maybe the story, maybe the theme of all these stories is to be out there when other people don't think you should be. It's too hot, it's too windy, it's too early, the bugs are too bad, whatever. I've always felt the deer have to be doing something somewhere. And I think if you have multiple properties, you run less chance of burning the deer out.
Right.
And you can alternate your properties. Go to your second or third best property if you think it's that bad.
Yeah, so a lot of what I'm hearing is, you know, you have the element of surprise on your side. Yeah, by being careful with what you're doing, mimicking what the farmer's doing, by hunting in a little, tiny little tree
Right. Where
nobody else would think to hunt, hunting on center pivots. That's one of the things I've appreciated about your hunting style, is it seems to be outside of the box type thinking and very adaptable, and also hunting days when other people may not be out there. And I think you share hunting permission with, you know, a lot of these properties that you're on.
You're not
the only one out there hunting.
No, I'm not. And although this CRP property, I'm telling you about this last one, nobody else wants to hunt. I got permission from a landowner that has quite a bit of property, and he said, just go talk to my farmhand here, and he'll tell you which properties are which. And when I went into that guy's yard, he had a deer target in the yard. I'm like, oh boy. So anyway, went and talked to him, and you could see he was like, oh no. But he turned out to be a really nice guy. And I said, look, I said, you know, he's got five different tracts of land in that area. I said, which is the one you don't want to hunt? And he said, well, he described the one, and that's where I've killed three nice deer.
Yep.
And it's very hard, and it probably is not conducive to the way he hunts. And he's a good hunter as well.
Sure.
But so in this case, out of five properties, I took the lesser of the five,
the
one that looked the hardest to hunt, and have found ways to hunt. And like I killed one out of a 3 foot or a 3 yard tree stand. I was only about 10 foot up, probably 8 feet up actually. And another big buck I killed on that property, I killed from the ground in kind of a ditch when the buck was walking up an old road that's no longer used. And I was sitting in a ditch and shot him at 8 yards from the ground. So yeah, but most of my properties, I have competition and lots of other hunters, but you'll be surprised, in September you don't have much competition.
Yeah.
And I know everybody's excited in Nebraska about Scott Frost being the new coach, and that maybe maybe Nebraska's gonna bounce back, and I would like to see that happen too. But I also think that that's going to mean there's going to be a lot more people glued to their TVs on Saturdays. I think, you know, again, college football, especially, you know, nowadays with the NFL receiving mixed reviews, I think college football is even in more of a limelight. And for most working guys, weekends are their opportunity to hunt. And if they're dividing their weekend between football and hunting, that's fine. It's what they like.
Yep.
And it's what they enjoy and they get excited about. For me, I like football, but I like hunting 100 times more, and so I'll watch the highlights at night or watch the tape play, but I'll be out there in the woods.
Going back to that hunt you just described, what inspired you to go sit in that tiny little tree?
I don't know. To me, I guess I'm glad you brought that question up, because one of the things I've found, and I think guys that hunt further west will be able to relate to this better than I don't have many opportunities to notice this, but I think in areas where it's mostly grass, that the lone tree or the sparse number of trees out there become like a signpost for them or a marker for them or whatever. But you take a big 10-acre field of grass and put one tree in it, I can almost guarantee you there'll be a deer trail by it. And I don't know if, like I said, I don't know if they're using it as a marker or you know, a visual signpost of some point. Maybe they, you know, butt their head on it and leave some sand or whatever too. But I've seen it several times where I've been hunting prairie grouse out in the sand hills, where you'll find a field and you're walking and there'll be one tree and you walk by the tree and, boy, there's a deer trail by here. and it might be right by the bottom of the tree, but I do think there's something to that. And so if you hunt kind of an arid area, and I would guess much of Kansas might apply, much of South Dakota, much of western Nebraska might apply to that. I don't overlook the one tree out in the middle of nowhere. And we also hunted a property, my brother and I, back in the 80s, a lot of deer. They had a million options on where to go. But a lot of deer would come out of the heavy timber and go through a cow pasture to get to the corn. As we started to analyze it, what we thought was happening was the deer were using the complete bare cow pasture as access because they could see everything. So even when the wind was negative for them, they still could rely on their eyesight. And nothing was going to, you know, it was a cow pasture. The cow had it cropped to the ground. But there was one dead cottonwood out there. It had been a bear to try to put a tree stand in that. I'll bet you 3/4 of the deer that walked across this 20 or 30 acre cow pasture walked within 30 yards of that cottonwood tree. Wow. And I don't know why. They had a bazillion other options. And so I do think there's something to that. And so if you have something unusual, don't be, you know, an unusual tree in the middle of nowhere, don't be surprised if it's being used somehow.
So a lot of these hunts you've just described, you're either hunting off the ground or hunting low to the ground. Why is that?
I'm not particularly comfortable really high up in a tree. I wouldn't say I'm afraid of heights, but I do know that when I drive mountain roads, I get that little feeling down around the waistline, like, well, this isn't where I need to be. Especially when you're driving and trying to look at the same time.
Right.
But anyway, I prefer lower tree stands, and that might be 8 to 12 feet. Probably, I would say 10 to 12 feet would probably be my average. And I know a lot of guys just shake their head, and that's fine if they are comfortable higher. But the reasons I like to be lower are several, and one of them is a little bit safety factor. But and the older I get, the less I want to use tree steps. I don't think I even use tree steps anymore.
The screw-in style.
I like ladder sticks. I feel safe on those, and I'm starting to use ladder stands.
Sure.
I still feel fairly athletic. I'm 56 now, but I don't see any reason to tempt fate. When I am in the process of trying to shoot a deer, I don't want to have to worry about anything else. And so I like a really safe, stable platform. I also like cedars because I've heard people say that, you know, that they think they can grab a limb when they fall, and the truth of the matter is it probably happens so fast you couldn't. But I do feel safer in a tree with a lot of limbs around me than I do in a big old naked cottonwood. A lot of the places where I hunt, there is still a lot of vegetation in that 8 to 15 foot range for back cover behind you and also some cover in front of you.
Right.
And I like that. But I also like the flatter path through a deer, flatter trajectory through a deer. For the way I shoot, it's a better option for me. Now, again, I know a lot of guys they think the trade-off at being 25 or 30 feet up is less scent, and they're probably right. But I hunt regarding the wind all the time.
Right.
And there are some stands that I have put in place and not used them for 2 years because the wind was never right. And then all of a sudden the wind is right and I'll go into that stand. So I think there's a trade-off, but I like the flatter angle. I like the more comfort level. I also think it's a more intimate way to hunt. And I think part of the thrill for me of using a stick bow is that I do need to be at a more intimate distance. And I still can be pretty effective in the whitetail woods. Pronghorn, I'll admit, I feel handicapped, but that also makes success all the sweeter. But
right.
with white-tailed deer, I rarely feel handicapped with a stick bow, even though my average distance is about 14 or 15 yards for the deer I've killed with a stick bow. That's the average distance. And I killed one at 32, and I didn't even know it happened so fast. I didn't even know, you know, I didn't have enough time to even think about how far it was. Usually, I set up my stands for 15-yard shots.
Yeah. And I'm assuming you're not over hunting these stands to the point where deer look up, intentionally look up.
Right. I think that's really important. And I, you know, early in my career, it was kind of fun to draw up on deer. I've never had target panic, so I've never had to worry about that being a problem. But I've had a lot of fun early in my career drawing up on deer and saying, I could have shot you. I really try to look for trees that have a lot of back cover, also a little bit of cover in front. But I think the most important thing is staying still. And that includes when there's no deer around, because there's deer that are out there, and they all see the movement. And if you're constantly looking around and so forth, and moving around up in the tree, they're going to see, and you'll never know they saw you.
Yeah. You described a buck earlier that he would come up on a dike and just kind of peer over the top. So those are the kinds of deer that you got to stay still for, even if you can't actually see them.
We had a buck that I was hunting a number of years ago. I never did kill him, but he had a broken back leg, and he was really wary. And that buck would come up to a dike, and all of a sudden you'd see the tip of a horn. I was on one side of the dike, and he's on the other. And then you'd see about 4 inches of antler. And the next thing you know, there are his eyes. And he was taking itty-bitty steps up that levee, peering out over where he knew danger lurked. And I think so much of that happens that we aren't even aware of. Mm-hmm. I remember one time glassing down this funnel of trees where I expected deer to come in the evening. And, you know, why isn't there any deer coming? They should be coming by now. And I got my glass up and was looking, and I saw a buck looking right at me. And he was 100 yards away, but he had noticed my movement, and he was just watching me. And had I never brought the glasses up, I'd never seen him. And, of course, he just turned around and walked away. And I think a lot more of that happens than most hunters are aware of. And sitting quietly on stand is it's hard to do sometimes. But, I again, going back, like you said, it's the old fundamentals that we were taught when we were kids, you know, move your eyes and that type of thing.
Another thing for new hunters, young hunters, I think just talking about tree stand heights, because I think if you read in most articles you read, somebody's probably talking about hunting 18 to 20 feet up. That seems to be a popular number thrown out there. You've shot a lot of deer low to the ground, and over the past few years, you know, Zach shot one 10 feet off the ground last year. Aaron shot his biggest buck ever 12 feet off the ground a couple years ago. And in both of those cases, it was Aaron's was a hanging hunt. I think Zach's was too. Maybe his was a second time in, but you know, they had the element of surprise on their side.
It looked like Zach's was from a willow, maybe.
Yes.
And so, you know, you get a scraggly willow in the middle of a bunch of bedding territory. Most guys would never even think to put a tree stand in that willow. It's difficult, number one. Mm-hmm. But that's a tree that those deer have never even expected or never seen any danger from. And so I was watching that episode, and I was thinking, you know what, that's very similar to the way I hunt. And I'll find a tree sometimes that most guys would walk right by and say, I can't put a stand in there. Well, you know, until the leaves fall off, you could.
Yeah.
And mulberries are really good for that, places where I hunt. And also some elms. Once in a while, you'll find some multi-branched elm trees that will be good for that. And the element of surprise that you mentioned earlier can play in their favor.
Yeah, and I think some people maybe think that they just need to be that high without regarding maybe the other vegetation, you know, what's behind them. You know, mm-hmm. if you get up high enough, maybe you're getting above you're skylined. I guess the point what I'm getting at here is, you know, you don't have to be 18 feet up to kill a whitetail.
In fact, one of the stands I had on one property was probably the tallest stand I had, and it was about 18 feet. And very uncomfortable on that one for a couple of reasons. But as time's gone on, I've noticed that deer coming from one direction will notice any movement I make. And what I did with that stand was I moved it back down the tree because it had some cedars growing up at the bottom of it, and I don't get pegged anymore from that one. So there was a stand that I originally went 18 so I could see better, and I've moved it back down to about 13 now, maybe 12, and I get pegged less. Yep. I probably get winded a little bit more, but I don't hunt it with bad winds.
Right.
You know, I don't go in there when it's a bad wind for it. Originally, I felt handicapped, and I think the way I hunt, I'm not handicapped at all. And I think a guy does sometimes need to make some changes in his strategy with a stick ball. I remember with a compound, I used to, you know, see if I could get up and find as many trails within 20 yards as I could possibly get, you know. And now I'm more saying, all right, I'm not going to hope for five trails all within 20 or 25 yards. I'm going to hope for one or two opportunities within 15.
Yep.
And I don't know, it's a neat challenge. All the bow hunting's good, but I do think if somebody's looking for an additional challenge or an additional way to enrich their bow hunting experience, the stick bow can be that way.
Yeah, that's certainly one of the reasons why I decided to try it. And I think just having to learn a new skill set, feeling reminds me, the desire to go out and practice every day reminds me of what I felt when I first started bow hunting when I was 12.
You know, I think another thing, guys that want to try a stick bow will be shocked at, you know, the length of a bow. But I have found that I have not had many issues. From ground blind, yes, but from trees, I've not had very many issues. I've had to clear a little bit more out right in front of me. And I shoot normally a 64-inch longbow, although I've got a new 56-inch pronghorn longbow that I'm thrilled I'm going to hunt with this year, I think. But I don't think it's as unwieldy in a tree as some people think. Mm-hmm. Ground blinds is a little bit, like a pop-up blind is a little bit more difficult, I think, though.
Yeah, you said you don't feel handicapped, and I think in some situations, from the stories I've heard, does that shooting a longbow or traditional bow was an advantage because you had a snapshot. You know, a deer was maybe looking at you, turn and gave you just a couple seconds
right.
to shoot.
There's trade-offs, but I no longer feel handicapped, and I haven't felt that way for 20 years. And like you said, there are many cases I think a longbow is advantageous. And when that deer stand out there at 35, that's not one of those times. But there are lots of other times when it's when something happens at the unexpected or quickly, or buck chasing a doe through real quickly. And like last year, my second deer, all those shots would have been very hard for me to pull off with a compound. And longbow was the answer on those days.
Yeah, that piece of paper you have there has a bunch of distances written down. Your average shot is?
Well, it's, you know, I every deer I've ever taken, every big game animal I've ever taken, I've recorded a bunch of information. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting. One of the things that's, you know, I only killed 8 deer with a compound before I switched to a longbow or stick bows back in 1988. But those 7 or 8 deer I killed with a compound were at 15 yards average. My average today on bucks is 14 to 15. One's the mean and one's the median. And the range of distance is from 3 yards to the bottom of my tree to 32 yards, but the vast majority of them are right there at 14 or 15 yards. And a handful under 10.
Yeah.
Does, I'm a little bit more selective with the shot just because whatever reason, and the 30 or so does I've killed have been an average of 12 yards.
Yeah, so I think that the average shot distance is interesting. You know, I've calculated mine from over the years, and it's pretty much the same, 15
really?
Yards. So one thing, a popular topic is people ask, do you stop the deer? Do you not stop the deer? What do you do?
Well, when you're only 10, 12 feet up and you're getting deer in your lap, boy, you've got to be stealthy. And what I've developed over the years, I've almost never used any kind of vocalization. A lot of guys do, and for many of them it works, and for some of them, all of a sudden they turned a very calm deer into a very alert deer.
Certainly.
And that doesn't work for me. And so what I'll do is I'll do this probably in 3/4 of my hunts, is as I'm approaching my stand, I'll clip the end of a green tree, usually a cedar or something like that. And so I'll clip 8, 12, 15 inches of cedar, not touching it with my hands, still holding it with the clippers. And then if I have to cross a trail, or I'll go close to that trail and then I'll flip that piece of cedar on the other side of the trail. And so what'll happen is a deer, ideally, will be walking down that trail. Now it's broadside, and it will see that unusual piece of cedar on the ground where it's no threat, and turn and put its nose on it, facing away from me. And so what that gives me, it gives me a stationary target. It also gives me a target of an animal that's engaged in something, and it's looking away. And usually, you know, it's got an ear, one eye can't see me, and the other eye that can might have an ear in the way. And so it allows me to pull off a very easy shot usually. Now, again, doesn't always work, but you'd be surprised how many times it does work. And then later in October and November, I might also put a little bit of deer scent on that. And I've got a guy out of Maine that sends me free deer scent, and we've exchanged, we're old friends from a long time. He's an old trapper. And the trappers know what they do with what to do with scents. And so I might put a little bit of deer scent on that. And or if I have to walk and I have to cross that trail to get to my stand,
right.
I'll put just a tiny bit of that scent on a weed that's 12 inches up, you know, or 18 inches up. And probably 3 or 4 times it's happened where a doe has come or a fawn has come and been so enamored with that scent and spent enough time there that eventually a buck that was trailing will come by and see that doe and come right to that spot and had that doe gone through there, that buck might not have come down the same trail. And so if you can keep a doe around you that time of year without spooking it, that will work sometimes. But again, stopping the deer for the shot, what I do is I have something unusual on the opposite side of the trail, and usually a clipped off piece of cedar. And that'll stop them long enough to investigate it. And it also gives me a chance, if something catches me not paying attention, to get situated and get, it buys me 10 extra seconds.
Yep.
And those 10 extra seconds can help. I shoot a lot of my deer actually on the walk. I would rather shoot them standing, facing away, but I'll still shoot a lot of them on the slow walk. But I would, like I said, I prefer to have them stopped, and I use vegetation to do that. You guys talk to the guy that does the vertical rubs.
Oh, Ted Miller.
Yeah, and he was talking about the Scotch pine thing.
Right.
And I do think deer are, they're very tuned in with their noses, and I think Scotch pine probably is an additional reason for them to rub that. They kind of like it, the scent, and being able to create scent. They're creating scent when they're breaking the surface of that. And so I do think if you can kind of create something that doesn't scare them, either visually or with their noses, like again, that cedar branch I'm throwing over there does that without doing anything audible. And for me, that helps me stop deer.
Bryce, appreciate your time. A lot of great stories, a lot of great tips and tactics there. I can see there's also a lot of future podcasts that we can do talking about all kinds of different subjects.
Well, there's lots of stories, and I think, I don't know, I believe most bow hunters like the cat and mouse angle of it. And I think if you're open to learning something, and I try to be open to learning from every single guy I talk to, and trying to pick up something from them, and hopefully I've got a little bit I can impart as well. But experience adds up, experience in the field, and I don't know, I enjoy this. I enjoy talking to other guys that live, eat, and breathe for whitetails and being outside. And so I appreciate this, I enjoy it.